People across the country are taking time to renew efforts to find children who vanished as part of National Missing Children's Day. It also holds true for a local family that never stopped searching for their daughter, Allie Lowitzer. She has not been seen since April of 2010, and Allie was just 16 years old when she disappeared. Channel 2's Brandon Walker joins us from Humble with what's being done to help find her and other missing children across the area. Brandon?
Hey, good morning to you, Jen. No doubt Allie's disappearance is one of the more high-profile disappearances we've covered here over the past 6 years or so. But get this, the Center for Missing Children says just last year alone there were 10,000 reported missing cases of children here in the Harris County area alone. As far as Allie goes, the hope, according to her mother, is that someone will see this with some information that'll bring her daughter home.
For 6 years, we have been searching for her. And it hasn't gotten any easier.
Joanne Lowitzer is Allie's mother. Allie Lowitzer has been missing since April 26, 2010, 6 years ago. She left home alone, walking to work. Allie didn't make it to work, though. She was last seen getting off a school bus. Allie's disappearance sparked a nationwide search, countless tips. One of them profiled on Investigation Discovery Channel's Last Seen Alive. The program followed a tip that Allie had been working in Columbus, Ohio as a prostitute. The tip was nil, not Allie. Today, on National Missing Children's Day, Allie Lowitzer got a billboard. She's had one in the past. Hopefully this time it will garner leads that work. Tips, Joanne hopes, will bring her daughter home.
I wish this billboard could stay up permanently. It's bigger than every store window in town. If we had digital billboards specified just for missing people, it could run for 24 hours without any repeats. It's a sad fact.
And back here live, this digital billboard will run beginning today through the month of June. As far as the investigation into Allie's whereabouts goes, it's being looked into by the Harris County Sheriff's Office. They didn't have any update on where that stood, but Allie's mother told me that she continues to follow leads, including one of some possible information or some possible sightings of Allie here in Texas. So she's hopeful that that information will lead to something, and if anything, she hopes the billboard will do the same. We're live this morning. I'm Brandon Walker, KPRC, Channel 2 News.
This is Mark. Welcome to the Catch My Killer podcast, and thank you for listening. Before I get into this week's podcast episode, I would like to ask for your support. I'm looking for listeners to help support the podcast by buying me a cup of coffee. If you can help support the podcast, I'm asking you to subscribe to my monthly Crime Coffee Club, which is only $5 per month. If you subscribe, I will share exclusive content with you. To support the podcast, please visit catchmykiller.com. and click on the donate link or on the buy me a coffee link. And if you cannot donate to the podcast, you can also help out by sharing these stories with your family and friends. Many of these cases can be solved if the right person hears it and provide the necessary tip that could lead to solving it. And that's enough of the coffee business. I would like to start off by saying that this is my 100th episode. When I first started this podcast 2 years ago, my sole objective was to find unsolved homicide cases that were mostly forgotten by the public and the media. 2 years later, my objective remains the same. Unfortunately, thousands of people disappear annually, and just as many homicide cases go unsolved. Over the past 2 years, I've spoken to over 100 people, including law enforcement, parents, siblings, friends, and authors about various missing persons cases and unsolved homicides. Unfortunately, many of these cases will go unsolved. There are many different reasons for this. Either the suspected perpetrator is deceased, there's no evidence, there's no witnesses, or there's no one that will talk about what they know. I can't even imagine how a parent must feel to either have a murdered child or to have their child go missing. And I know some of these family members have gone to their graves with a broken heart because they died without ever getting any answers. For instance, For episode 49 of the podcast, I interviewed a former reporter about the case of Linda Dirth of Brookville, Ohio. Linda was a 13-year-old student home from school to commemorate the funeral of former President Lyndon Johnson. She was raped and murdered on January 25th, 1973. Her parents had gone to work and her brother had gone over to help his grandmother with some chores. Today, nearly 50 years have passed since Linda was brutally killed inside her own home. The police have never identified the killer. After the podcast, Betty Dirth, who is Linda's mother, reached out to me. She shared some details of the case and even told me that she was positive that she could identify the man who killed her daughter. However, she said that neither her nor law enforcement could prove it. The person she mentioned knew the family well. Betty told me that this man most likely even knew Linda's schedule and probably knew that she would be home alone that day. Betty told me that this person is still alive and that this case will probably remain unsolved. Sadly, Betty has since passed away. I find it disturbing to know that she passed away without ever seeing justice for Linda. But I have a feeling they were united after Betty departed this world. Another case that has left her parents heartbroken is local to me. This story involves the homicide of a young pregnant mother named Brittany Stikes. I covered this story in episode 58 of the podcast. On August 28, 2013, Brittany, who was pregnant, and her 14-month-old daughter were on their way to Brittany's father's home to celebrate his birthday. They never made it. Passerby found the deceased body of Brittany and her daughter. The killer had shot Brittany and her daughter, but thankfully the daughter survived. Unfortunately, Brittany and her unborn child did not survive. For the episode, I spoke to David Dodds, who is Brittany's father, and the two homicide detectives who have been searching for Brittany's killer. I feel like this was a personal attack, and Brittany most likely knew her attacker. I also think that it's possible that the person who killed her may have known that Brittany was going to her father's home that day. And I did share my thoughts with the detectives, and I can say that they have looked into every situation that could have led to her death. The problem with this case is no one is talking. This case will need a tip to solve it. When I started this podcast, I wanted it to be unique. There are so many podcasts about true crime, but I didn't want to follow the same format and just retell a story with information found on the internet, because I know that much of the information on the internet about these cases isn't true. I cringe whenever I hear podcasters share untrue information about cases that I'm familiar with. For my podcast, I wanted to share unknown facts about the case that the public wasn't aware of. So I decided to go with a completely different format. So I have interviewed family members, friends, reporters, and authors that are familiar with the stories, and I let them tell the stories on behalf of the victims. The Catch My Killer podcast is dedicated solely to the victims. It's not an investigative podcast. It's more of what I would consider a dedication to the victims and their families. And it's really important for people to share these stories, because the more people that listen, the better the chances are that I can reach the right person who has vital information about a case. For the 100th episode, I interviewed Joanne Lowitzer, who is the mother of 16-year-old Alexandra Allie Lowitzer, who attended Spring High School in Spring, Texas. Allie was your typical teenager. She enjoyed life, she had friends, and she loved her family. Allie was active in art, choir, softball, and she was also in the Girl Scouts. But the lives of the Lowitzer family would change forever on April 26, 2010. It was just like any other day for the Lowitzer family. Allie had called from school to ask her mother for permission to walk to the Burger Barn and collect her paycheck. The Burger Barn was Allie's first job. Allie also wanted to see if she could work that night. Originally, Joanne said no, but Allie begged and pleaded. She had never walked to her job before, and it was only a short distance from her home. After relentless begging from her teenager, Joanne finally gave in and gave Allie permission to walk to her job after school. On that day, Allie got off the bus at 3 o'clock and then began walking to work. She would disappear and never be seen again. Joanne told me that she was angry with the police because they treated Allie's case as if she were a runaway. Joanne told them that Allie would never run away. She was positive something terrible had happened to her daughter. Let's call it a mother's instinct, because, like any other parents, we know when something's wrong with our kids. It would take the police a few days before they finally opened the case and began searching for Allie. She's been gone for 11 years. There have been no tips or any information about her whereabouts. Joanne has worked with a PI who received a tip that Allie was a victim of sex trafficking and might be in a trap house in Ohio. Joanne told me that the tip didn't lead to anything significant. So Joanne and her family continue waiting on finding out what happened to Allie. Now on with the story of Allie Lowitzer, as told by her mother, Joanne Lowitzer. I wanted to say that I am familiar with your case. I remember hearing about it years ago. I don't know, maybe it was 5 or 6 years ago, or maybe it was not long after it happened. But I guess over the years, I just assumed that it was resolved. I thought maybe Allie had come home or something. But I had no idea that there were still no answers to this case.
We run across that issue quite often, especially like if I run into somebody, not somebody that I really know, but somebody that knows who I am. Sometimes they're like, oh, she's still missing.
Well, right, because you never hear about it. There's never any updates or anything about this case. So I imagine a lot of people have never heard about it or even realized that your daughter is still missing. And this is actually the reason why I even started this podcast, because I know that after the initial investigation for a homicide case or for a missing persons case, you don't hear much about it. The media goes away and the interest in the case just kind of vanishes. And then after a while, it's like nobody person is forgotten. And I just don't want that to happen to anybody. I want their case to be remembered. And as long as I have the podcast, people can always look at the different episodes. So these people that I've interviewed, they're on the Catch My Killer podcast. I haven't forgotten them. And every time I get a new listener, then that new listener is probably going to listen, and then that person will remember that person as well and possibly share the information. That's what I'm trying to do, is just bring awareness to missing people like Allie. So in your situation, I've never had a child disappear, so there's no possible way I could comprehend how you feel or understand how much you miss your daughter, but I would definitely like to see you get the answers that you deserve.
If you look at the age, though, even if somebody is in their 20s or 30s, they're still somebody's child.
Right. It doesn't matter how old your child is. You're always going to love them and worry about them. So tell me about Allie, like when she was born, and just what kind of a young lady was she?
Alexandria Lowitzer. She was born in Pasadena, Texas, like I was, and my family. Moved to Spring, Texas. Well, I think she was in kindergarten. And we moved in Spring to have a better school district, a better environment. Pasadena, even though I grew up there, there's refineries and a paper mill. And it's just an industrial part of town that we lived in. It just gone downhill quite a bit. So we decided to move a little north of Houston. And we wanted a better, you know, education for our kids, and everything seemed great. We were doing activities with the kids in school, and Allie, as far as school, she was never a straight A student, except her conduct. She had straight A's in conduct, but she struggled. I guess she got that from me, but she did enough to get by. When she went missing, she was in 10th grade. She loved to play softball. And when she got into junior high school, she played the flute in band. And then from the flute, she became interested in choir. She loved to sing anyway. So she went going into high school, she couldn't do choir and band. So she chose choir. And her art. She was a good artist. I still have a lot of her artwork hanging on the walls. I'm proud of her for her art.
Was she interested in pursuing a career in art?
I know she had aspirations to be an artist. The summer of 2010, she was supposed to visit an art college in South Carolina. Her art teacher had sent home some paperwork where there was a program for high school students. So we were looking into that when she went missing. That was something that we were really looking forward to. We did Girl Scouts together, even though I think I enjoyed it a little bit more than she did. But yeah, her main focus was her friends, her art and music. I mean, anything and everything to do with music, live music and concerts and videos. Her favorite band was Green Day, and she loved them so much. She had a notebook where she hand wrote a lot of their songs. I'm not sure why she wrote them out, but going through some of her journals, I had seen that she had wrote a couple of songs herself, which was neat. Of course, I didn't discover that until after she went missing. That's one thing I wish that she would have shared with me. But we understand that teenagers have their private lives that they don't want to tell anybody about.
Right. And I went through that with my kids. I mean, as teenagers, those are pretty tough years with a lot of them because they're just learning about themselves and they have a lot of decisions to make. So it's understandable that they can sometimes have their troubles. But it sounds like Allie was just the typical all-American kid. She liked art, music. She had friends. She did what kids her age typically do, loved her family. And it sounds to me like she had a really happy life. So it doesn't sound like she would have been someone who would have ran away, because I do believe I saw in some of the things that I read that there was a possibility that she was a runaway. But to me, it doesn't really sound like she was a runaway. I think something happened to her.
Yeah, that was law enforcement that accused her of running away. I think they profiled her just by looking at her bedroom and, oh, she's 16 years old. She likes the color black. When law enforcement came that same night that we reported her missing, that's what they basically told us, was just to call us tomorrow when she comes home. And that was the start of our bad relationship with law enforcement.
Unfortunately, this happens often. And so many times the police will just say, oh, he or she just ran away, they'll be back. I mean, if your child has a history of running away, or they have a history of doing drugs or just running with the wrong crowd, I can maybe somewhat understand that line of thinking. But when you have a case where you have a child like your daughter that follows the law, minds their own business, stays out of trouble, just does their own thing, and they just don't have any history of being the kind of child that runs away, I honestly think that you really have to look at their cases a little bit differently.
Definitely.
So the police probably should have taken this more seriously than what they did. Now, about the day that she disappeared, was it like any other day? Was it a normal day, or was there anything unusual about it? Is there anything strange that you can remember that may have happened before she went to school?
It was a normal day. It was a Monday. And of course, Mondays are hard for everybody to get up early. So she was getting up and getting ready for school, and I was getting ready for work. Typically, she walked out the door to meet the school bus before I left for work. And she would normally either just, because her bedroom door is right next to mine, she would say, Mom, I'm leaving, or she would pop her head in my bedroom door and say she was leaving or something. And that morning, I didn't even see her. I heard her. I woke her up. But I never saw her after she was dressed and ready for school. We didn't even know what she was wearing until almost a week after she went missing. So that part was difficult. The morning was very typical. The weekend leading up to that day, there was nothing that had happened. No altercations or anything. It was just a regular weekend.
So she went to school that day like normal. And from what I understand, This is what I've read on the internet in various news articles. So she had a part-time job working for some burger place, and after school, she wanted to walk there and pick up her check and maybe pick up a shift. And then you did not want her to do that, but she managed to talk you into it. So is that part of the story all true?
It is true, yeah. Most of it was over text message, but I was telling her, no, just wait till I get home. She had called me once. Of course, she was still in class and shouldn't have been using her phone anyway. So that was one of our discussions. But yeah, she called me. She's like, Mom, he's supposed to pay me. I really want to go pick up my paycheck again. Told her, no, like, just wait till I get home. It's not a big deal. She's like, well, I'm pretty sure I can work. I'm going to ask him if I can work. And that was the hardest thing to talk about, you know, because that's the one thing that I regret the most. She knew the right words to talk me into letting her do what she wanted. And everybody tells me, it's not your fault. Don't beat yourself up about it. I should have, could have, would have.
Well, I would have to agree with your friends and the people that know you. It wasn't your fault. I mean, there's definitely evil out there. You were just doing what normal parents do. They go to work so they can take care of their kids, and you were a single mother. If you would have known something would have happened to your daughter, I know you wouldn't have let her go out there. You probably would have even left work early and came home. So it wasn't your fault. It just wasn't. So what was her original plan after leaving school? Did she intend on coming home first and then walking to the burger place, or was she just planning on getting off the bus and then heading straight to the burger place?
I told her, your brother's home, because she had forgot her key, her house key, that day. So I told her, I was like, well, I'll tell your brother just to leave the door open just in case he leaves. But it ended up where she walked the other way to exit the neighborhood to walk to work.
How far was her walk to work?
It's only a quarter of a mile. Our neighborhood, we don't live on the outside street, but the street that basically runs a circle around the neighborhood is exactly 1 mile around, because we used to walk or ride our bikes just in the neighborhood. So to exit the neighborhood, we live like by one of the exits. And so it wouldn't have been very far for her at all to actually get out onto the one straight shot street to walk up to the burger barn.
Had she ever walked there before?
No, and she had never asked either. And if you think about it, she just turned 16 in February, and this was her very first job. She had been trying to get a job at the mall for the longest time, but, you know, this one came up. I don't remember who told her that the place was hiring. So she decided to apply for that, and she got the job. I mean, what kid wouldn't want to cook hamburgers and french fries all day? And she always had a ride to work. On school days, my mother was always over here at the house. And my mom didn't live too terribly far from us. And my mom had made it a habit to be over here at the house, because the semester before Allie went missing, so it'd be the first part of the school year, there were girls on the school bus that were picking on her, bullying her, trying to pick fights and stuff. And they even got off at her bus stop, which the driver shouldn't have allowed. So all the kids got off at Allie's bus stop, and there was two girls that tried to beat her up. And Allie ran home that day, and she called me just frantic. And she said, these girls are going to kill me. I don't know what to do. And they had punched her. And so I left work early and came home. And, you know, I told Allie before I left work, I said, you hang up and you call 911. So, because I didn't know, frantic kid on the phone that's there by themselves. That's what the first thing that comes to mind is, tell them to call 911. So after that day, my mom made a point to be here at the house when Allie got home from school. This gave Allie a peace of mind that it wasn't going to happen again.
Did that put an end to Allie being bullied?
Not until the end of that semester, because she also had them for gym class. And we did file a report on the girls because they lived here in the neighborhood. So that was a trying ordeal. But ever since then, Allie sat up at the front of the bus. So when we were able to review the bus footage for that day, Allie was sitting towards the front of the bus.
Now, what happened after she got off the bus? Was there any type of video?
Well, after she got off, she wasn't seen again. My ex-husband, John, had gotten a chance to review the bus footage. And he was looking out the bus windows to see if there was any cars or anything that like jumped out at you. And there wasn't anything. It was just the neighbors' cars that were on the streets that we could see. The bus surveillance, it's mainly on there to look at the kids. So the vision out the windows was very limited. But the only thing we have to go by are the two boys that got off at the bus stop with Allie. And then one of the girls that drove home, she pulled up in her driveway just after Allie got off the bus. So there were three eyewitnesses that did see Allie, that she got off the bus and she turned to walk out of the neighborhood.
Now, do you know if the police checked banks or any local businesses that were nearby that might have had cameras, or any homeowners that had cameras in their homes that possibly filmed outside?
Well, you have to think about when this was 2010. Most homes didn't have their own surveillance. But it wasn't law enforcement that acquired any surveillance. It was John. It was Allie's dad. And there was one place. It was the Shell gas station on the opposite corner of the corner that Allie would have walked past to get to the Burger Barn. And John was the one that went up there and asked if they had any camera. And they let him watch it on the video. And they even burnt him a copy of it because he was looking for Allie walking across the screen on it, and he never saw her. And so he gave it over to law enforcement and they lost it.
Did she even get to the gas station or walk past it?
Well, she wouldn't have gone into the gas station parking lot. If you think of an intersection, Allie would have walked, say, like on the southwest corner, and there's the surveillance was on the catty corner, so it would have been like on the northeast corner. But their cameras were facing the intersection, and beyond the intersection, we would have seen the part of the parking lot that Allie would have had to walk through.
Did she walk through that area?
No, John never saw her on the video.
So it seems to me like whatever happened to her probably happened within 10 to 15 minutes after she got off the bus.
Yeah.
Based on the fact that this happened so quickly, I wonder if it was just a random thing. Somebody just happened to see her walking by and then pulled up and then abducted her.
Yeah. If you think about it, there are so many different scenarios that could have happened to her. She could have premeditated a friend picking her up and maybe taking her by to pick up her paycheck, so she would have at least gotten that. And then maybe they were going to go and goof off. It could have been a stranger that randomly saw her and say, "Hey, do you want to ride?" It could have been somebody that she recognized and say, "Hey, do you need a ride?" Anything but her specifically wanting to run away and leave forever. I mean, there's so many possibilities.
Now, I read that she never made it to pick up her paycheck. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, they said that they never saw her.
So she never even got the check that she worked so hard to earn.
Yeah. It's her first job. Mm-hmm. She's 16 years old. What kid doesn't want their money? So I find it very odd that she didn't even make it up there. And her purse with the rest of her cash, it was still in her bedroom. So that was one of our arguments for law enforcement. If she was going to leave, why didn't she come back for her cell phone charger, her cash, some clothes, her makeup, her dog, stuff like that?
That's how teenagers were back in 2010. It's probably how they are now. I mean, I can remember from my own boys, they didn't go anywhere without their stuff. If they're running away, they're taking their money, they're taking their phones, and they're definitely going to cash their paycheck and take that money as well. So they're taking everything.
Right. Because Allie was the type of person where she even took her journal to school because she liked her friends to read it or see her sketches and stuff like that. So I don't see her just leaving all of that behind.
No, I don't either. And she definitely would have picked up her paycheck.
Absolutely.
So her paycheck being left behind at her job, her money being at home, and all of her valuables being left at home, I would say that that's probably proof that she definitely did not run away. And over the years, I've never thought that your daughter ran away.
It seems only law enforcement does.
I think it's pretty common that whenever someone disappears, law enforcement will just assume that the person ran away or left on their own.
Yeah.
And what law enforcement agency is in charge of handling your daughter's case?
So it moved a couple of times. Because the city of Spring, we don't have our own police department. So we're patrolled by the county. And I live in Harris County, which is the largest county in Texas. So it's broken up into precincts. So we're patrolled by Precinct 4. They're the ones that came out and started everything initially. And then I think it was a week after that, the Harris County Runaway Division stepped in. And then after that, I can't remember the exact time frame, but it was eventually handed over to Harris County Homicide. Because me and John, we kept complaining that you can be doing other things. Can you do this? Can you do that? And that it being the Runaway Division, there was only so much that they could do. So they asked the Homicide Division if they could take over the case so that we would have more resources. If I would have known back then what I know now, I would have never asked for that, because as soon as they took over the case, everything stopped. All the progress that we had made just felt like it stopped. And they started looking at the family, me and John and Allie and our parents and all the friends and stuff like that. And it angered me because they had stopped everything. The only thing that was constant were the ground searches that the Laura Recovery Center were doing. So while they were out there doing ground searches, they were interrogating John and Mason and led to polygraphs and DNA, and eventually they cleared us, of course. But, you know, looking back at it now and the knowledge that I have, unfortunately, I understand that they had to clear us first. They just had to make absolutely sure we didn't have anything to do with it. And yeah, so that was devastating. But the case is still in the hands of Harris County Homicide / Cold Case Division, and that's where it's probably sitting on a shelf.
So this is considered a cold case. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Now, on the day that she disappeared, what did you and your ex-husband do that evening? Did you both go out looking for her? How did you both react? Did you panic, or were you calm that evening?
I panicked. As time passed that evening and she wasn't returning my text messages or phone calls, I drove up there, and it was before 9 o'clock p.m. And when I pulled up, the place was shut down. There was no lights on. The chairs were on the tables. So it looked like nobody had been there for a while. And yeah, I freaked out because I'm thinking, what the hell? Allie's supposed to be here and she's not. neither is anybody else. So the first thing I did was I called John, and he was at his second job, and he was trying to calm me down, telling me maybe she's with a friend, maybe somebody can pick her up. She's got to be somewhere. So I did what I could until he got off work and came back home, called friends. I drove by her boyfriend's house. He was also worried about her because she wasn't answering his text messages. And then when I felt like I did everything that I could, I went back home, and Mason was here, and him and his friends actually went out and drove around the neighborhood to see if they could see her. And eventually when John got home, after discussing everything, and that's when we finally decided to call and report her missing. And it was just before midnight when the officer came to the house the first time.
And you did say that the police didn't start looking right away because they thought it was possible that Allie was just a runaway. Is that correct?
Yes. That's when the female officer came to the house and asked if she could look around in Allie's room. And of course, we let her. She asked us a few questions and then started to walk to the front door like she was leaving. And I'm like screaming internally, "What do you do something?" And they're like, "Oh, well, she probably with some friends, and y'all probably had a fight, and she's probably cooling off somewhere." And I'm thinking to myself, "You don't know what the F you're talking about. How dare you assume that we had a fight and she ran away?" And I'm like, "What do we do?" And she was like, "Call us tomorrow when she comes home." So there was no initial report or anything done that first night.
How long was it before law enforcement began taking this case seriously?
Seriously? Never, to be honest, but it was probably at least 3 days after Allie went missing when they finally opened a case, filed some paperwork. It had to have been at least 3 days.
So if Allie was abducted, it would appear that whoever did this would have had at least a 3-day head start.
Yeah. And from my 11 years from doing this, I can't preach enough to parents out there that don't wait for law enforcement to find your child.
I agree with that statement. I think it's best that you begin looking on your own.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I grew up being taught that law enforcement is there to help you. And you call them and they fix it. I know that's exaggerating, but that's the way I was raised. And that first night when they didn't do anything, I was completely crushed. That's like looking up to your superhero and then finding out they're really a bad guy.
Right, because the police look for people for a living and solve crimes for a living. They have the resources. They have the know-how, the experience, the education. They have everything. They know what to do when someone goes missing. And if there's a homicide scene, they know how to address it and protect the integrity of the case. Someone like me or you, the everyday citizen, we don't know what to do. There's not a book that tells you what to do if your kid goes missing or if a loved one gets murdered. So you have no choice but to rely on law enforcement. And if they don't do something within the first 48 hours, then you're going to have a problem with the case. Because within the first 48 hours, that's when people are going to remember things, when you're going to be able to find people that'll possibly talk, you know, and you have to start going around the neighborhood and knocking on doors and talking to people and asking them, "Did you see this or did you see that?"
There's me and another mom. She's in Florida. Her daughter is missing also. We're actually compiling from our own experience. I don't know if it's going to be a book or whatever, but, you know, on information for parents on some things you can do. But every case is different. Like Allie just disappeared off the face of the earth. my friend Dawn, her daughter went to spring break, and there was actually friends that went with her. So even though cases are different, we still have the same frustrations of both of us not knowing what to do. And it's funny you say that, because just last week we were talking about we need to educate parents on what they can do themselves. Because when that officer came to my house that first night, she didn't tell me jack shit. She didn't give any advice on what we can do ourselves. Just basically wait. And that's the worst thing that anybody can do when somebody is missing. You don't wait. You get out there and do it yourself.
I agree with you completely. You have to. So after Allie was gone, how long was it before you thought, okay, this is some serious shit. My daughter is really gone. I may never see my child again. How long did it take for you to, where you got to the point that you thought, I may never see my daughter again?
That first night when I pulled up in front of the burger barn, I knew something was wrong. I didn't know what, but my gut told me that something was wrong. And everybody around me tried to convince me otherwise. And with it being 11 years, it's really hard to say that your daughter's coming home. So to even conceive, that's really hard. But it just depends on if there's a lead that comes in or what's going on with the case as to what side of the fence I'm leaving on. I feel she's coming home. I feel she's out there. Or I feel like she's never going to be found. It's a roller coaster for sure with me living so close to Houston. At least once a week, twice a month, you hear something on the news or something on social media that there were remains found in a wooded area. Just last week, there was some that weren't too far from here. They don't know if it was a male or a female. I sit on the edge of my seat until I get some information. The hardest part is to think that she was dumped somewhere. Sorry, I'm trying not to talk about that part because it is the worst case scenario, you know? From what I've learned is until we find a body, she's got to be out there somewhere. And that's the part of the hope that she's going to come home one day.
Well, I'm certainly glad that you are still feeling hopeful, because I think that it's probably best that you try to keep a positive attitude, because you just never know. I mean, Allie could be out there still alive somewhere. And as you said, since there's no body, that maybe you will see her again. How often do you contact the police for updates, if ever?
I don't have a relationship with them. Anytime that me or my private investigator would send them information and then hoping for some type of feedback, they would just push us back and say, well, we want to talk to your son Mason, or what about this or what about that? My private investigator has given them so much information and we don't know if they've actually looked at it or not. Did you hear about when we were in Ohio? We were in Ohio on some leads, and
Yes, I do think I recall that. Wasn't that an incident where you thought that she had been abducted and taken to Ohio and then trafficked? Is that the incident that you're talking about?
Yeah. When we were there and we were working with the Columbus police, they were going to do a raid on a trap house. And if Allie had actually been in there, they would have not been able to hold her if she was arrested. And then if she made bail, they would not have been able to hold her, because law enforcement down here never put her in the NCIC, in the national database, saying that she was missing. So she could have been arrested. She could be a Jane Doe anywhere out there. and nobody would have known. We basically had to go above the detective's head here at Harris County and beg and plead for them to enter her into the NCIC system. And that's actually the law, that law enforcement is supposed to put them in the system. And we went to Ohio several years after Allie was missing.
Now, did anything significant come from that lead?
No, it didn't. But nothing ever came to about anything to do in Ohio. Every blue moon, we still have people say that they've seen her there, but nobody seems to take any pictures. We get tips that come in. We've had them from Alaska. There was a Walmart in Alaska. I think I saw your daughter 2 years ago. How do you call a Walmart in Alaska and say, somebody saw my missing daughter there? Do you have any footage? I know people mean well, and it's greatly appreciated that they're paying attention, but we're still waiting for that one tip to come in that will give us what we need.
Now, do you have a Facebook page for Allie?
I do. It's called Hope for Allie, and then Alexandria Lowitzer.
Do you post to it on a regular basis?
It's mainly me sharing other missing persons information, unless I'm doing a fundraiser or promoting a community project or something. But as far as case updates, there really isn't anything. We have people ask us all the time, is there any new news? Have you heard anything? I thank them for thanking the Valley, but it's always no.
Have you spoken to local media about doing anniversaries of Allie's disappearance?
They used to be interested. They really aren't interested anymore. I do an annual event for awareness for Allie, and it's been years since the news has come out. The newspaper, the Houston Chronicle, has done a little bit more than local news, but I try to do other different missing person events and stuff to get Allie and some of the other local missing persons some attention. Sometimes media will come out to those.
Well, it's good to hear that at least some of the media resources are giving coverage to Allie after all these years. Now, my last question that I would have for you is, for anyone out there that's listening to the podcast, if they know anything about what happened to Allie, or if that they know that she's still alive, what would you say to that person or persons?
I would ask them or plead and beg them, if they do have any information on what happened or where she is, let's still tell somebody. And there's so many different ways to remain anonymous. There's Crime Stoppers everywhere. You can tell somebody to tell somebody else to give information. But at this point, I don't care. I just want to know where she is.
And that concludes the story of Allie Lowitzer. This beloved teenager vanished 11 years ago. Most likely, she was either abducted or picked up by somebody that she knew. Do you know what happened to her? Her mother is still hoping that she can find out what happened to her daughter. If you have any tips about Allie Lowitzer, please contact either the Harris County Sheriff's Department at 713-967-5700 or contact Crime Stoppers at 713-222-TIPS. Or you can also visit the AlexandriaLowitzer.com website for additional information about this case. I will be sure to provide this information in the story notes. So you may also ask yourself, why are these stories so important? I'll tell you why they're important. They're important because today, it could be your child that gets abducted. What would you do if someone abducted your child? There's no book that tells you what to do. What would you do? Or what would happen if, God forbid, someone murdered someone that you love? You wouldn't even know what to do. So just consider the fact that some of these cases could just as easily be one of your loved ones. Remember that when you listen to any of these episodes. And if you are a parent, law enforcement official, friend, or relative seeking justice for an unsolved homicide case, please visit my website and complete the contact form, or contact me through Facebook. Thank you for listening.